This is A Lost Plot, the podcast where we explore meaning in movies together. Hello, universe. Welcome back. It is your boy with another episode of, you guessed it, A Lost Plot. I am your host, as always, Maverick, and today we are bringing back our co-host, who is glad to be back with us today. I dragged him along for this one. Hello, Avalon.
Hello, hola, konnichiwa, and leho.
Nice. Now, today we are going to be answering a unique question, and that is Sony trash? Do we have to change my mind on that one? I don't know. We'll see, because today we are talking about Madam Web. The story is by Kareem Sangam, Matt Sazama, and Burke Sharpless. Its screenplay is by the same last two, in addition to Claire Parker and S.J. Clarkson, and it is directed by S.J. Clarkson. It stars Dakota Johnson as Cassandra Cassie Webb, Sydney Sweeney as Julia Cornwall, Isabella Merced as Anya Corazon, Celeste O'Connor as Maddie Franklin, Tahar Rahim as Ezekiel Sims. The whole list. Also, a little shout out to Adam Scott for his role as Ben Parker. But at the end of the day, we're not there for that. We're there for the movie. Avalon, what is Madam Web about?
Okay, so if you want to sum up Madam Web in a nutshell, it's Cassie, girl, gets bit by a voodoo spider through her mom, and then she goes through a near fatal accident when she's an adult, unlocks the ability to see into the future. She learns the man who killed her mom is trying to kill three girls, so she tries to save them while learning her new abilities.
Yes. So if you see the reviews, you know that a lot of people aren't a big fan of this movie, especially even the basic areas of the even the rating systems from other people that give generally positive ratings to trash movies have trashed this movie. So the question is why? And I think you can point to a lot of different things, but for our purposes, we are going to try to be consistent. So looking at the same types of things we look at in every movie, because we think that those same principles apply in every situation, and seeing how those succeed and how they fail. So anyways, overall, Avalon, based on the 9-point rating system, what did you give this movie?
So I used the rating system on the website and it got me 1.4.
Oh, wow. Okay. There we go.
Such a high score.
You will be surprised by this, I'm sure, but I got a 3.3.
Mm.
So, yeah, more than
I almost
double.
Thought you'd get a negative score this time around.
yeah, well, so it was really interesting. Just the emotional journey that I went through, which is not the emotional journey I think they intended me to go through.
Yes.
Watching this movie.
Oh, I'm quite sure.
It was a situation where I went, wow, this movie is actually not as bad as what everyone seems to be saying. I could see where people have concerns, but I'm not that disappointed with it. And then as the movie progressed, I proceeded to go, oh, no, there is some very serious problems here. And I came to the side of every other critic about this movie. So anyways, let's get into it. The opening scene. Did you think that this opening scene was one that caught your attention and made you want to keep watching?
I mean, it started off like the very first visuals were okay, where it's like you have the rainforest, you know, like the scientists, the archaeologists, like they're going into the rainforest looking at spider webs and such. But as it progressed and like you find out she's pregnant and like all these like weird interactions happen, it felt more like a stage production. Everything is sanitary and everything is like just staged out. Like it didn't feel like a real rainforest location. And then you had Tarzan and the Red Men of Mars come down from the trees as spider people. And it just was like, oh, what? And they helped Cassie's mom give birth to her. It was all so surreal and weird. So I guess if I was interested in watching, I was confused. It's like, what is happening here?
So, you know, I think sometimes when a movie starts, having a lot of unclear things isn't bad, because the idea is that throughout the movie, you will learn more and it will make sense and everything will become clear. So I didn't hate that about the opener. I think the bigger thing was that the opener spoke to you in the way that every other superhero movie does. In that, so I vaguely recall our recollection about this for Ant-Man. And yeah. And our overall thoughts on Ant-Man, going back to that, was something along the lines of, this is like your stock stereotypical superhero movie in some ways. Like, this is what you should expect. It wasn't exactly, and it was unique a little bit because it was a heist movie, but overall, like, if you're going to look at a superhero movie, it was quality, it was fine, it wasn't amazing, but it wasn't terrible, you know, and it had all of those scenes you expect to see in a superhero movie, right?
Yeah.
So, there was that kind of impression I got for the opener, but then made even more stock. It was like they took, there's like the realistic superhero, and then Ant-Man's like the caricature of the superhero. It's like they took the caricature and turned it into stick figures. And that's what they used as an opener. It was like every single possible impression of what could be a stock opener was in this opener. Like them literally explaining everything through the dialogue, the introduction of these supernatural characters, the, you know, villain secretly being the friend at the beginning, you know, all of these things. It was just like, oh, they're in a tropical rainforest hunting a magical whatever. Oh, this time it's a spider. What a surprise. Oh, I don't believe in those superstitions. Wow. It was like every single line coming out of their mouths spoke to stock. And I was just, as an audience, you watch that and you go, this is not gonna be a good movie. When you get that from like 30 seconds into the movie, you're like, crap, what did I do? Yeah. And I will say that, like, this is one of those times, I am a huge, like, dialogue for me is a huge pet peeve. That being said, it's not a core story issue. And so it was like, in this case, the dialogue in this movie is some of the most abhorrent dialogue I have ever seen personally.
But I could see what you're coming from. I could understand.
It's bad. That being said, it came to play in certain critical moments where having bad dialogue actually significantly hurt the story as a whole. So, anyways, but we'll get into that. Mm-hmm. What's more important is the character, right? Is the main character compelling? Was she flawed in a compelling way? Was there something significant missing from her life that she needed to be made whole? What was the issue with Cassie? Was she compelling?
She was awkward sometimes. She didn't know how to interact with certain people, but was it compelling? Don't know. I mean, it was a cringeworthy to watch, honestly.
I could see that. Yeah, I could see her being a cringeworthy character. Yeah. When you think of her, is there like anything in particular that makes you think, oh, she was just cringeworthy? Or like, what are you thinking of when you think of her as a character? Because I know she definitely has cringe.
I mean, she was socially awkward, for one thing. But then it was also like she had some social ability. It was like, I don't know. It was just like the way she handled certain situations. It just was like, it was just awkward to watch her interact with people on a certain level. Like she didn't know what to say to people or what to, how to handle things.
Yeah.
Or how to convey herself. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was even scenes where I wasn't sure what she wanted. Like, what did she want?
Yeah, I'll have to think about that for especially later. So this is one of the points that I actually gave her the movie more points in. And that was because I think that her being socially awkward, which is a flaw. It's not like a crazy flaw, but it's definitely a flaw you will see in a lot of different people. And it's not no one likes to be socially awkward. It's just is what it is, right?
Yeah.
But I think you could definitely tell her issues were like, well, there was people she was comfortable with, and then there was people she wasn't, and most people were people she wasn't, and a lot of that insecurity dealt from her not knowing her parents, you know, not knowing her mom, feeling abandoned, all these other things. And so I thought there was some decent tension between past hurts of who she was and trying to deal with that. I don't think they explained it very well.
No, or I agree. Like, with that. Yeah, they didn't explain it very well. I would, yeah.
Right.
Because I could see that being there, but I didn't feel it very strong. Like, it was like, it wasn't shown enough for me to, like, feel like it was decent or not. So.
Yeah, and I think what really maybe made her actually compelling to me was not just that she had these hurts, but that she also, like, she pushed a, she was clearly conflicted internally. Mm-hmm. And that what I thought was interesting. So if you look at her as a character, she doesn't want to take care of the girls, right? And this is jumping a little bit ahead, but she doesn't really care for them particularly, but she also feels this need as a paramedic and as someone who desires to generally save people's lives, that she should do something to protect them. And so, and you see that also when she's trying to save her boss, O'Neill, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And other characters too, where she has a strong sense of what is right to do and legitimately wanting to save people's lives. But at the same time, not really understanding her place in the world and feeling very estranged from the world that she's a part of. So, and there was other times where it was too on the nose, like when she's talking to the cat and she's like, us strays have to watch out for each other and stuff like that. So, you know, I wouldn't say that it was holistic, but it was definitely, I thought it was definitely there. So I gave it some pretty solid points for that.
Okay.
Anyways, the side characters, did you think that they also had their own motives, their own needs for doing what they needed to do?
I got the impression from the side characters that most of them are just living in the moment, just going along with what Cassie is doing, barely showing any desire for what they want. I mean, I felt like they're a step down from hippies in some regards. I was just going with
you talking about the girls specifically or just everyone?
Well, the girls, like, even like Ben Parker, where it's like he's not really given, like, or given barely any desire. Like, he barely acts. I don't know. I've shown very little from his character as far as, like, his desires, what he wants. He just kind of goes with what Cassie says, and, like, there's not really a whole lot of questions. I mean, he's being a nice guy in some sense, it makes sense, but there's other times, like, okay, well, it does seem a little strange you're just, like, going along with everything here.
That's true, especially when he takes care of the girls. That's interesting. Okay, that's a fair
because he's already taking care of his sister-in-law, like, it, like so, and she's pregnant.
Yeah.
He just makes some very questionable choices.
Well, that's for sure. There's a lot of questionable choices that are made in this movie.
Many.
There's a lot. But interesting. So I'm gonna go to bat for this part again. But I do see what you're saying about Ben Parker, so I think you will have me shift gears down a little bit. I will say Ben Parker as an idea was one of my favorite parts of this movie.
Oh, yeah, I liked his inclusion in the movie. I did like his part. It just, his character could have been done a little better.
Yeah, and I think especially because it's saying this is an earlier version of the universe before our everyday friendly neighborhood Spider-Man played by Peter Parker is on the scene, right? And so you get a much younger version of Ben Parker, and it's kind of cool to take a glimpse into that world and say, what is Ben Parker like before he's the old uncle, you know, and him being this, you know, paramedic who's not completely got his life together, but definitely is trying his own things, and he's trying to be a nice guy and legitimately take care of the people around him and stuff like that. It was like, oh, that's kind of cool, you know. And he didn't have, you're right, he wasn't like a crazy compelling character, but he was just your everyday guy trying to do the right thing. And I kind of loved it as a side character. He wouldn't make a great main character, but yeah, you know.
No, I did like his character. I'm like, even though I didn't think the characters, I felt like the side characters could have used more depth and development, I did like his character in particular. I did enjoy the scenes with him in it. So
about the other side characters, which specifically I'm going to say were the three girls, which is Julia. What did I put down? Julia, Anya and Maddie. Yeah. Julia Cornwall, Anya Corazon, and Maddie Franklin. Anyways, those three are pretty much, I mean, it's mostly them, Cassie, and the bad guy for most of the movie. So, you know, and I guess technically Peter's mom. But there's not a ton of high profile characters in this story. So they're pretty much it. And as side characters, I think that they were actually pretty good. And the reason I think that is because these side characters had a unique dynamic to each of them, in that they each mm-hmm. had a very distinct personality. One was mm-hmm. strong-willed and stubborn. The other was like responsible but reserved. The other one was mm-hmm. shy and insecure, right? And they each had a unique personality that they brought to the table. So even though their dialogue itself wasn't that good, they mm-hmm. still clearly had distinct characteristics. And what I thought was especially interesting about it was that they all had these very different personalities from the same hurt points, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Like, they came from a position of loss from of their parents to some degree or another, and yet they all ended up dealing with that very differently. And so mm-hmm. I thought that was just interesting, maybe from a more psychological perspective, that those hurts manifested themselves in different ways. But I thought that at the very least they added unique dynamics to each other and to the story mm-hmm. as a whole. I don't know that, like I said, the dialogue was amazing, but I think personality wise and hurt wise they were developed enough to give me some pretty solid footing, and I thought at least put it in a solid direction.
Okay.
And it was like these two points, honestly, the main characters and the side characters, is where I went, this movie isn't as bad, especially at the beginning when you first introduce all these characters, that I was like, wow, this could actually be a solid movie. What is everyone talking about? Why does it have a 22% on Rotten Tomatoes? That's silly. This is actually could be something. And I, if you know that I actually looked up the reviews for this, that's saying something, because I almost never look up the reviews. I was very conflicted to watch this movie, and I'm still conflicted that I watched this movie.
The only thing I was going to say is, like, because we were talking after we went out of the theater last night, I did look up the three girls, like, they're characters from the comics.
Yeah.
I was wrong, that none of them are recent. They're all from, like, before the year 2000, I think.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, they're all three Spider-Girl or Spider-Woman from Marvel Comics at different points. So.
Okay.
And I guess Maddie Franklin in particular does have the robotic like spider arms. So I was wrong on that point, like in our discussion.
I kind of started to look that up. I didn't look it up in depth because I was curious, especially because they have all these premonitions, or Madame Web has all these premonitions about these future spider girls. And so does Ezekiel, which we'll get to in a minute. And so but then they never really show up as spider people in the story, even though all the posters seem to indicate otherwise. So you're like, hey, is this real or is it not? In the end of the day, they were. Okay, so cool. The setting. Did you think the setting was believable?
Oh, the setting. the setting. I had some very choice thoughts about the setting.
Oh, boy, let's go.
So, I mean, just watching the movie, watching the different things that happen, like the logic of like certain things taking place. As I said, like the beginning scene was kind of felt like a stage play almost, like it was so sanitary. Right. Like it didn't feel like actually in the jungle, in the rainforest or whatever. It felt like you were watching people like pretending to be in the rainforest, like rehearsing their lines. That's what it
a
felt
stock,
like.
A stock like National Geographic video being put on a green screen behind them or something.
Yes. That scene felt like. And as it progressed, I just was like laughing and like cringing at the same time at the setting and the laws and like everything that's going on. Like I just it made me want to have a Joker moment where I'm laughing continuously while banging my head into a brick wall. Okay. I just like that's what I wanted to do. It's just like
What else specifically made you go like this universe feels a very off?
It's like they make these decisions in the middle of like she's trying to protect. Well, like, they say the year is, like, 2000-something, and yet the villain has, like, high-tech computer stuff that feels, like, more relevant day-to-day, like, modern. Uh-huh. And, like, you see, like, technology that's out of place for the year and place.
Yeah.
And then, like, the decision to strand them in the middle of the forest, I don't understand completely that decision. Like,
Oh my goodness. That was I thought
and then her decision like to take them away from the city in a kidnapped, like, she steals a taxi, takes it to the forest, leaves them there, goes back to her apartment to look at research notes, comes back, takes them again, goes to her motel, teaches them some stuff, takes them to her Uncle Ben's place, then she goes to Peru, back.
Oh, and it's my goodness.
All the course of this, it's like, how does any of this make logically, I don't know.
Okay, so, yeah, so... At first, I was going to go, this isn't really a problem with the setting, but the more you think about that, I see what you're saying. Because in a universe where she's actually a fugitive, which is what it indicates that she is, she wouldn't be able to just leave and go to Peru. She wouldn't be able to just steal a taxi and hold on to it indefinitely. You know, literally driving it around town without plates, like it's no big deal. Especially in the middle of New York. So... Mm-hmm. It was very yeah, you're right. Okay, so the set, yeah, okay, that's fair. The only thing I put down was the spider people at the beginning being not making a lot of sense, but I was like, well, you know, they don't really explain it, so I'll take a little bit away, but I'm not gonna be too picky. But that makes sense. That's definitely going to also make me trash this a little bit more than I expected to. Fair point. So let's talk about motive. Did you think that there was compelling motive in this story? Is there a reason for the protagonist to be involved in the plot?
I mean, aside from like conscience and moral reasons, not necessarily a whole lot. I mean, she's getting these visions and like she clearly wants, like she feels conflicted, like she wants to save lives, but she doesn't want to really be involved with these girls. Mm-hmm. But she's also like seeing their deaths in like the future, and she's like trying to prevent that, and like she keeps seeing the villain Ezekiel, and she's like, I guess like she's like going through this process, like trying to figure out what she is, like what is.
I mean, yeah,
I wasn't clear sometimes what she wanted. Like she's doing these things. I mean, and you said she was conflicted, and maybe that's it. Just like she's not sure what she wants. So like she's trying to figure out what she is, what she should be doing. She's trying to save lives, but she also doesn't want to get too involved at the same time for part of the movie. And it's like, okay, I guess I don't know, like, is there a compelling reason for her motive for being involved? I don't know, because it's not clear. I don't know. It's like she's kind of confused herself, I guess.
Right. Well,
so it wasn't bad. Like, this is probably one of the most points where like I'm kind of trashing it a little bit, but it's actually not bad. It's just like, I don't know. It's kind of like middle way kind of thing where it's like, could have given more reason, but I don't know. It's like confusion isn't a bad thing necessarily. It could be used well.
Yeah. And I think that's a fair point to make, is that sometimes confusion is actually an opportunity to add something to the storyline, to add some more complexity. I think in regards to this, and I guess the question about themes, which we'll get to in a minute, but I think they had something here. So there was some level of these visions, right, causing her some level of guilt, and I thought that was an interesting concept and idea to present from a more a motivation standpoint, and also from more of a theme standpoint. But especially because, you know, she can see the future before it happens, at least to some degree. How accurate it is up to question. But at the very least, she knows an idea of what might occur, especially when she sees that with her boss. When she sees him dying, she tries to stop him. She doesn't succeed. And then he dies in front of her face as he gets hit by a truck. Right. Mm-hmm. That was a scene where you see, and then you see Ben Parker tell her, "You did nothing wrong." Right. But she just saw him die, and she had seen it about to happen and tried to stop it and didn't succeed. And there was a sense in which that scene made her wonder, right, like, but did I do something wrong? Could I have done more? Especially because she saw it coming. I think that was an interesting idea to explore. Is there some level of responsibility if you see it about to happen where you should have done something about it to stop it, or done more to stop it, right? And I think that responsibility, especially because she is in the paramedics field, or you know, she's driving an ambulance around and all that kind of stuff, she's used to having this responsibility of saving people's lives. And when she knows she can do something and she doesn't, it's like she has failed her responsibility as an individual contributing to society. And perhaps to some degree, her trying to save her relationship with her mother or what make up for the sins of her mother. I'm not going to read too much into that because they didn't really explore that, but I think they wanted to go in that direction as they indicated near the end. Anyways, all that to say is that like there was something there. I didn't give it full points for this. Not at all. I gave it like half points because I thought that it was interesting where she was coming from. Clearly there was some level of guilt that she had. And then also some attempt at a relationship with these girls when she's really not developed a relationship with people in the past and maintained some sort of friendship very well for people that she cares for. And so, you know, I think that there was something there. I'm not going to say it's strong. I don't think it was, especially because a lot of this, especially when it comes to the more thematic stuff, which we'll get to in a minute, is like bashed over your head. So, you know, the show don't tell did not exist in this movie. It was tell don't show. They're like, let me tell you exactly what's going to happen and exactly how we want you to think and exactly what you should be thinking in this moment. Because guess what? It's about to happen exactly how I told you. That is a recipe for disaster, guys. Like, don't do that, please. If I wasn't reviewing this movie, I would have walked out. Like, it was that is the stuff that pisses me off. So, anyways, yes, half points. The villain. What did you think of Ezekiel? Was he awesome? Wasn't he so cool?
He's like a dog with bark and no bite.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh,
he clearly has abilities. And from the visions we've seen, he can kill people and like he can cause harm and he can do stuff. But he has nothing to counter Cassie's clairvoyant abilities of predicting the future. So right. Like he's foiled at every turn because she can see him doing things. So he never gets a victory, really, because she stops him. Even with all his money and his high-tech futuristic software.
Yeah, so, exactly.
The only thing I will say about Ezekiel, like as far as a positive, is that his motivation, his fear of death, was an interesting one. Because that's not often like shown in a pod. Like, I don't know, like for a villain, like, often you don't show a villain being afraid, like as a motivation, like, and oftentimes it's not, it's hard to show like a villain being afraid as a positive, like motivation for a villain, I guess. In this case, this might be the one exception because he sees the future and he's like, he's trying to prevent a possible future where he gets killed by these three girls at a certain time. So it's like, it's not an immediate threat, but he sees it as coming. So he's like, he is afraid of death. And that is his like motive. But it's not like an immediate, like, oh, I'm running from this. Like, I'm trying to deal with this now to prevent it from happening. So, like, I felt like that was an interesting, I thought that was an interesting take. Like, an interesting part of his character.
Yeah, it's, so, and I guess that's realistic to a certain degree, right? Like, I think, especially because a lot of movies today don't show a fear of death, when in reality, that's something that 90% of people are very, or actually all people are really afraid of to a certain degree, whether they admit it or not.
Yeah.
That death is a scary idea, a scary concept. And to actually have to grasp that and to fear what might come from that is a significant thing. So yeah, I guess that's to a certain degree fair.
And he's also been given like a vision like of how he will die. So it's like he's kind of has an idea of like, oh, I know how I will die. So knowing how you will die, like it's kind of seeing his actions in response to that, like how like he's trying to prevent that from happening. So which is kind of a human response.
Yeah, I think you've made a little bit of a point on that. I will consider that, because that's true. I do have a lot of problems with Ezekiel as a character. I don't I think
yes.
I initially labeled that as a problem, but in reality, all the problems come from the other things surrounding it, which we will definitely trash, and I mean trash, in a second, because this is one of the worst villains I have ever seen in cinematic history. But the specific issue of him being motivated by that, I think that that's fair. I think that he definitely being afraid of death is a fair thing to motivate him. Other than that, he had a cool suit. And besides that, he was like the handlebar mustache villain, you know? I am here to kill everybody, and I want to be the rich tycoon who lives the luxurious life and sleeps with many women and has lots of money and never dies. Ha ha ha. You know, that was him. And yes. It was disgusting. Not because he was a disgusting villain, because it was so stock. It was like, have you ever even thought that this character could, like, I just don't even know how you get so stock like that. Like, this is baby stock. So yeah. It's like you went on Getty's Images and downloaded a picture and said, this is the bad guy. So
no, there was a review. I think I mentioned this, but there was a review headline I read, and I think it perfectly described this movie in a certain way, where it's like, this movie is campy, where it's like, it's kind of just got all these like stuff in it. That's,
and it's like if you get so, and the problem with stock characters is not that you can't use things that have been used before. The problem is that when you don't develop these characters enough as unique by themselves, or having these attributes for a reason, people start to be able to predict what's going to happen next, right? And a big driving force of these stories is this level of uncertainty that you have about what's going to happen next. The higher the level of uncertainty, the more intrigued they're going to be. Even if it's a age-old classic like Hamlet, you repackage it as the Lion King and people are still curious to see what happens, you know? So it's not like that this can't be done. It's just the way they did it was so blatant that everyone could see straight through it. And they did.
Yeah.
So anyways, we'll get to more of that in a minute, but let's talk about themes for a second. Are the ideas of this theme discussed or developed as the story progresses, if there is one? What do you think?
So initially when I wrote this, I said no, because I couldn't find an ideal that she stood for at all. But you said something a few minutes ago, which made me got my brain turning, and I'm not completely sure anymore. There is no ideal. But because I think they were trying to riff off of the great power comes great responsibility theme, like from Spider-Man.
Okay.
But like, they're kind of doing that with Madame Web, where it's like she's kind of learning to embrace her power, and as she embrace responsibility, and as she embraces responsibility, she gains more of her power, more or less, as the movie progresses.
Yeah.
So it's like, as she becomes like, tries to help people and like use her power to help, like do good, like it almost like unlocks more of it, kind of in a weird way, and also like, or just like seeing that play out in her life a little bit. So, I mean, I'm not sure it's super strong, because initially I didn't think there was any ideal or theme to this movie. But now I just thought of it like 2 minutes ago when you said that one line about responsibility. Like, wait a minute. And my brain started thinking.
Okay. That is interesting. I hadn't really thought about that. I actually kind of like that more than where I was going with it. Okay. I'm not convinced that that's the theme, but I do like the idea of going toward the great power comes great responsibility theme. My personal thought was family, that there was a strong thematic idea on family and the importance of family and all of that. And I think that they really tried to blatantly hit you over the head with, oh, we're family, this is so important. And it really didn't make sense at certain points. Like
they're going for the Fast and Furious family.
Yeah, exactly. family. It solves every problem. Yes, exactly. That's what they were doing. So when throughout the movie, she's like, oh, do I care about these girls? Do I not? Which is kind of like, okay, sort of could see where they were going with that. But they're always running away. So, you know, so much for family making it through. But she decides to take care of them. She's like, don't worry, I'm going to take care of you. And then they say something along the lines of, no, we'll take care of each other. We're a family. And I'm like, woman, you guys, I've almost died every single time you've come into contact with this bad guy. What do you mean you're going to overcome through the power of family? This is some BS. Like, this is not how this works. You guys are just going to suddenly succeed. Like, granted, they haven't died, so there's something to be said about that. But I have a premonition about fireworks, and together, through the power of family and fireworks, we will destroy the bad guy. I was like, this is not...
This is your sense. Typical children's story, kids. Learn from this.
Yeah, like Dr. Seuss could take these lines and make some real content out of it. Come on. Yeah. So, anyways.
Come on, Dr. Seuss, spit some bars out.
Yeah, come on, boy. All right. Anyways, let's talk about heightened tension. Did they successfully take the protagonist and put them in a worse situation as the story progresses?
I gave it pretty low on this. I mean, because the reality is, with her premonition, like her clairvoyance, she kind of prevents all the losses from happening. Mm-hmm. Where it's right. Like, there is no losses because she sees them, or given a brief glimpse of what could happen, and then she stops it. Mm-hmm. I mean, right. The exception being the police in the subway, where it's like, the police in the subway die, clearly, but other than that...
But she didn't have... No, did she have premonitions about that? Did she have a vision? I don't know if she had a vision about the police officers dying. I guess we don't care about the police officers dying. We just care about the girls dying.
Yeah, for some reason.
Go ahead. Sorry, keep going.
No, I don't really have much more to say. That's pretty much it, so.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that her visions as a storyline piece were actually really interesting. It was a really interesting idea. The problem is it inherently destroyed the tension of the story. And so, yeah, there was never a concern they were going to get hurt because you just went, oh, well, she just had a vision about what's about to occur. Mm-hmm. She's going to stop it. Now, granted, they did do pretty well from a cinematography perspective at making you unsure if you were in the middle of a vision until you were pulled out of the vision. So that was kind of cool. Like that was very much the first person perspective of Cassie, where she thought she was experiencing these things when in reality, those things hadn't occurred yet. She was just having a vision of them, but you thought they were occurring just like she thought they were occurring. So that was kind of cool. But like you said, it destroyed the tension. And other than O'Neill dying, that, which really was the thing that catalyzed her into feeling obligation to act. There wasn't much tension drawn out through this story, I thought. So do you even want to, I'm just going to skip the one about a world shattering loss. Cause we already know she didn't based on what we just said.
World shattering loss.
You want to answer that question? Was there a world shattering loss, Avalon? Was there?
No, did there I wasn't. Miss something? Nope. No, you got it right.
Okay, all right, we're moving on. Get out of there. All right, revelations. Was there revelations in this movie? Something that changed everything?
Oh, yes, she did. There was one. Yes, she had a vision where she meets her mom, who she never actually met in real life, and discovers that her mom went into rainforest while pregnant, risking both of their lives because Cassie had a genetic disease that would kill her if she was born. It was for a good cause.
Yeah, I don't even think she was going to die from that disease. I thought it was like she was going to... have brittle bones or something. I don't exactly recall. So I'm not gonna die on that hill. But yes, you know, I did give them some points for this. I was like, somewhat, not really, but like, it, the thing is, it gave you a new perspective on the movie. So that's why I said, okay, it gave you some perspective on the mother and the sacrifice she made. That's great, and it did fundamentally change Cassie's emotional state, which from a character standpoint was okay. That being said, it didn't actually fundamentally change anything about the story itself, because she goes on to do exactly what you expected.
it wasn't like we're given much, like, in terms of their relationship to begin with. Like, she mentions her mom died when she was born, but she doesn't really have, not given much in regards to her relationship to her mom, aside from the notes. Like, she reads the notes.
Right.
And such, but it's not like we're given much of a strong, like, reason to root for the relationship, to see her angry, or, I don't know. It's all, like, all in passing, I felt like.
Mm-hmm.
So, and maybe I'm being a little harsher here, but it's just, like, so when that revelation came out, it wasn't like, oh, amazing. It's just like, oh, like, I kind of felt like, okay, it's like, I guess it changes things, but it wasn't like earth shattering or like, I don't know. It didn't add much to the story, as you said. It was like, okay.
It was assumed that there was trauma between her and her mother because she didn't experience any time with her mother, really. And some sort of resentment with her mother. But you don't actually see that. It's just more of inferred to a certain degree, which is weird of all things to infer when they spell out everything else, that this is the inferred thing. Until they spell it out, I guess, when she has that vision that is this shattering revelation. I don't know. I didn't give it much here, obviously. I gave it some points because I thought that it actually did change some things about the movie. So as much as I don't like this movie, it was something. And it's interesting that these certain things got points in my rating of this, but other things that, like, this was one of those movies that I gave a lot of things zeros for, which I almost, like, it's rare for me to give a complete zero on a point value on the rating system. But the fact that, you know, the villain got zero, the heightened tension got zero, et cetera, like, many things got zeros. It was because these things were absolute garbage. But yeah, you knew that at the end of the day, she learned this great revelation, and then she goes off to kick some bad spider butt, like you knew she was going to do anyways. So yeah. Was there a surprise ending?
Well, she gets hit in the head with a firework that causes her to go blind and becomes paralytic. She didn't see that coming, so... considering her clairvoyant abilities, I mean, considering her clairvoyant abilities, she should have.
True, true.
Like, just dodge your head to the side, I don't know, just...
The ending... I wouldn't say I was surprised on the outcome. I was surprised on what technique they used to bring about the outcome. And... let me just say, that was a surprise in the worst way possible. For two reasons. I didn't think you could disappoint me this much in an ending. But they double disappointed me in two ways. One, the line where Ezekiel has caused quote-unquote chaos as all of these girls are about to fall off beams and whatnot, and then he literally looks at Cassie and says, "You cannot save them all." As an audience, you go, "Hold on, wait a second. What are you talking about? You can't save them all. This woman is fighting for her own life, let alone the girls' lives. You're trying to murder her. Why are you thinking she's even thinking about saving them all? She can't save them all. She's about to die herself, right? Aren't you about to kill her?" But instead, the villain's thinking about how she can't save them. Anyways, that was a dialogue problem. That's not the actual problem. The actual problem was that she all of a sudden just grows arms to it, that have herself as part of them, and
like, she can be in multiple places at once.
Yes, and saves them all out of nowhere. Now,
yes,
they said she would discover powers, but let me tell you, when you just decide to grow the powers that you need at the perfect moment that you need them, that is the most Deus Ex Machina ending you could think of, where you just say, okay, let me just become the god over this scenario and pick up and put the pieces back where they belong so everything can be okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Now that's so okay, right? It's so okay.
This is the part in the script where it says, then a miracle happens, and then it continues with the script.
Then a miracle happened. Okay, so that was the first thing, right? The fact that she could just have these powers that solved all the problems. Now, someone who's listening to this would say, oh, well, they did hint that she would grow new powers
earlier in the movie when the spider guy who had a pointless scene where they went off to Peru for no reason just to have this one scene and talk about how she would get her powers whenever she felt like it. They actually hinted to that earlier, so it's okay. Well, let me just tell you, like, that's true that they did hint at it earlier, but when you just have the powers come out of nowhere and solve the problem, it begs the question, like, what could actually stop her, right?
Yeah. Like, well, and also, this movie gave no precedent. Like, there was no precedent for the powers she developed in that scene. We're never shown any other character who does what she does. And it's like, he says she could be multiple places at once, but we're never shown what that looks like. We're not given, like, an example. It's just, like, it's just said, one and done. And it is kind of, like, innocuous and bit, like, ambiguous.
Right.
And so it's just, like, it's not clear what that means. And so when it happens, it's like, what is this? Like, what are we seeing here?
Right. And here's the thing. If you could think of a completely different thing coming in and solving that problem instantly, you know that there's something wrong with that technique being the solution, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think like, oh, her magic power was she could turn her enemies into little spiders and then they just run away and that would solve the problem, which she could have, that could have been her power, then that clearly isn't the right technique. Or, oh, she could make spiders appear in his brain and eat up his brain, and then that would work. Or, oh, she could summon all the spiders from around to go and save the girls and pull them back onto the ledges, right? Whatever. That, like, any number of these things that I just came up with in my brain in 5 seconds would have been just as justifiable explanations for what just happened, means that there wasn't a real substance here on how they solved this problem, right? Like, this shouldn't be this simple to resolve. Versus, let's just say, my favorite, Lord of the Rings, where, you know, at the end of the day, Gollum is the one that ends up destroying the ring in the Lord of the Rings in a twist of fate where Frodo doesn't actually throw the ring into Mount Doom and says it is mine and keeps it for himself, right? The fact that Gollum is the one that throws it in has symbolic significance. Also, it's like, how could you really resolve that in a different way? Well, Sam throwing it in really worked. Not really. You know, it's not like the Nazgul coming would help. Like, there's you could try to put other things in there, but it doesn't work in the same way as having Gollum there. And so that's where everything that they had built beforehand fulfills expectations in a way that is satisfying and was even foreshadowed in some ways in earlier parts of the story. There is nothing like that in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, probably overdid that point. Just wanted to say that. The other point, which I have to say, so Ezekiel,
mm-hmm.
The fact that an S in the Pepsi Cola company sign is what killed him is the stupidest ending to a villain ever. And the reason it's stupid is not because an S in the Pepsi Cola sign crushed a man, because let's just assume that it was
he died for the sake of advertisement.
Yeah. You know, drink Coke, right? Is that the sign? I don't know. But anyways, it's not the fact that a sign killed him, because if a sign fell on me, it could kill me. I believe that. The problem is that they have precedent of this man being hit by multi-ton vehicles going at 60 plus miles an hour at any given time in the movie multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
This man especially got hit.
He leaps up and then the ambulance hit them in the air.
Oh my gosh! Oh.
Like, he sees the ambulance and jumps up, like, right in the way of it, too.
Earlier, there was a taxi and it busts through a wall and hits him. He does not die, right? If that's not enough, an ambulance drives off of a, what was it, a freeway? I think it was a freeway through a brick wall, flies through the air. The man jumps, like you said, jumps up to meet it, right? Which doesn't make sense. Why the bad guy jumped into harm's way, because no one does that.
He's like had this like, take me moment.
Exactly.
He wanted out of this movie too.
Oh my gosh.
He tried and failed.
Oh, yes.
No, but he jumps up. He gets hit by an even stronger vehicle, not even just going across the air, like the ground, flying through the air at top speed, hits him, does not die, but proceeds to fall and get hit by a sign piece, and that does him in. That was just like this every precedent you have set in this movie says this should not work. This should not happen. But yeah, it did. It stopped him. So
that's the power of Pepsi for you.
That's the power of Pepsi. The power of Pepsi. Yes. Man. Oh boy. Yeah. Anyways, that's all I want to say on that. Because
drink
I
Pepsi too, and you too can defeat your enemies.
That's the story. That's the message. That's what they want you to take away. Yeah. Drink Pepsi. Nice. All right. Does the character grow?
Does he?
I gotta get off this movie. Does the character grow?
No. All she has is powers at the end. Like, she's the same person pretty much.
Okay.
I mean, she's blind. I guess that's the only other thing. Like, she's blind and paraplegic, so she can't. Like, she can't walk on her own anymore. But she can see everything now. So.
I don't know. I will once again kind of go for bat, to bat for them, just because I mean she did have something with her parents or her mother specifically, and she clearly has some sort of family at this point through these girls that she didn't have previously. So you know, there's something there. I'm not gonna say it's great. So she's more stable as an individual. Anyways,
yeah.
If you want to buy that, buy it. If you don't. Doesn't matter. Yeah. Because does the movie have a message?
I guess it has two. We have the great power comes great responsibility kind of thing, where I guess it kind of has that. I don't know how strong it is. As we said, it's kind of just, it's there. And it kind of intertwines at certain points in the movie. But
right,
it's kind of illogical too. It's like with some of the things that happen.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And the family thing, you know, it's there, but it's not very well developed. So I, you know, gave it half points on this one as well. It's very much the, we will survive through family. And you go, okay, well, I mean, it didn't exactly work out that way. And honestly, the girls were more of a liability than anything else this entire movie. So much for the coworker mentality or family mentality. But yeah. They were trying to convey something, I thought.
Yeah.
But were you satisfied? Yeah. Did you enjoy this movie? Oh my goodness. Avalon, please tell me.
I'll tell you, like, the notes for this rating, what I wrote, what the heck did I watch?
This movie McPissed me off. That's what I
wrote. Made me want to drink Pepsi and, I did the only thing I'll say I did from an ending perspective like was because obviously they have Ben Parker in the movie. They introduced Mary Parker, who is Ben's sister-in-law, and they've hinted, like, in the movie they do hint at Peter Parker's, like, this is Peter Parker. They don't say it outright ever, but it's just like they mentioned that his dad is somewhere in the world, like in Mumbai or something. They're hinting that he's always gone, which is a hint to the fact that he's a espionage agent, which is what Peter Parker's dad is in the comics. Mm-hmm. He's a secret agent. But yeah, like they keep hinting at this is Peter Parker. And it's like when he's born and like Madame Web or Cassie, like she makes a comment where it's like Ben Parker has a long road ahead of him. Well, because she sees his future. So I was like, I did kind of appreciate that a little bit, because it was like almost like a nod to the future of like Peter Parker, like Spider-Man that we all know. And I did kind of like how they played that little bit out in the movie. So
yeah, that's but, true. Yeah.
So I was a little satisfied with that little part of the movie, because I kind of liked how they did that. But that's isolated in on itself, that little zoomed into the microscope ecosystem there.
Yeah.
when all the good stuff is related to pointing to other movies or other characters, that's not a great sign. As there was not a lot of great signs about this movie. So, you know, take it for as you will. But did your rating change? Do you like it more? Do you like it less? What do you
think?
Well,
I do admit some of my points were maybe a little mismanaged. And you did convince me a little bit on some things. I probably gave it, because I gave it 0 points on things you gave it some points for. So I think my rating might have just jumped up to like 1.8. So like, it was 1.4, 1.8 is like, okay, actually I didn't give it credit on this point that I probably should have. And on the themes and stuff, I gave it zero flat out. But after thinking about like the responsibility thing, like, well, maybe 0.1 on like 1 point on that. So it's just like, well, I'm not one whole point. I'm sorry. 0.1 points on that. So maybe like 1.8 now, something like that. So I was like, okay, I feel like that's a little bit more fair.
And you definitely pulled my rating down a bit. There was a couple points, like the villain thing, you pulled it up a little bit. And then the, you know, a couple other things, you pulled it down. So overall, it ends up at about a 2.5. So almost a whole point less. Not quite. But, you know, overall, it was a pretty compelling case against a movie that I already thought was bad. So, you know, what can I say? It wasn't hard to convince me. And what do you know? That's the pod. Here we are. That's it. That's all we got. We hope you all enjoyed, because we're not coming back for this one.
Yep. Sayonara. Adios. Zoikin.
See you all next time.